Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
It's so much more than just a profile picture. At Catholic Singles, our platform offers you many opportunities to get to know the person behind the picture. Sign up today at CatholicSingles.com.
Thank you so much for downloading our podcast we call Manage Your Money God's Way, presented by Compass Catholic Ministries, where we teach, using biblical principles, the best ways to handle money. Now, the ultimate goal is to help you eliminate your debt totally, no matter how small, no matter how large the debt may be, and then we'll show you how to live a debt-free life. The name of the Bible study is Faith and Money Matters, and you can learn how we can help you, and you can read about this Bible study at CompassCatholic.org. My name is Steve Holbrook, and with me, as always, is the co-founders of Compass Catholic Ministries, John and Evelyn Bean. And in today's show, we want to discuss the conversation that you need to have with your parents, probably sooner than later. And it's all about the important documents that they have. Are you aware of where they're located, or are they scattered around the house? This information is necessary if someone dies, but also if they're in an accident or if they become ill and can no longer take care of their own affairs.
You know, it can be a really tough process to go through trying to ask your mom and dad this kind of information because, you know, they probably haven't been real upfront with you and sharing this kind of stuff with you, and they're probably not going to be comfortable talking about it. But if you come at it from an objective perspective, it's a lot easier to do it now than when there's an emergency and you're scurrying, struggling to find information that you just can't find.
And there are serious side issues if you can't find that information. So if your parents aren't going to start the information process, they're not going to start talking about it.
The sharing process.
Yeah. You need to jump in and ask them the questions if your parents won't start it. So let's talk, John. There are 10 questions to ask your parents, right?
Yep. Absolutely. Could you tell me where you keep your important information in case I need to find it? That's probably the most important question you can ask.
Because you would hope that the important information includes everything you need, but you may need access to things such as deeds, vehicle titles, savings bonds, stock certificates, insurance policies, pension information, bank accounts, brokerage and mutual fund accounts, real estate holdings, or partnerships and business agreements.
You need to know where not only the originals are, but where the copies are. So, because you're probably going to have to present, in many cases, the originals. And so you're going to have to know where those are. But then if you don't have copies and you give them the originals, then you definitely don't have copies. And so you want to always have a copy so that you've got something to refer to. By starting where the information is located, maybe you'll be able to uncover information that could be missing. You know, make sure your parents have a safe place to store all the sensitive and private information.
And if they get kind of wigged out about this and they don't want to give the details to you, then make sure they have their own list and they store them with somebody they can trust. Maybe it's a lawyer or an accountant or somebody like that. But make sure somebody has that list if you're not going to get it.
And the other thing is, ask if they've got a safe. So if they do have a safe in the house, you want to know where it is and how to get into it. If there's a key or a combination or something like that. The other thing to know is if they have a safe deposit box. In order to access it, your name is going to have to be on file with the bank. So you're probably going to have to take one of your parents down to the bank with you and get a new signature card so that you will have access in case of an emergency.
So let's go on to question number two.
Well, before we do that, though, there's been something recently on our local television about safe deposit box. And a lot of people, they rent their safe deposit box, they put stuff in there, and then they don't go see it for...
Years.
Years, yeah, absolutely. And what's happened is that as banks change hands, they become new names, new companies, and all that kind of stuff. Sometimes the stuff in the safe deposit box, the records, get lost, and they drill those boxes and they put them into unclaimed property. So if your parents have a safe deposit box, make sure you go with them and make sure it's still there and the stuff is still in the box.
Well, the other thing I thought was interesting about that TV show was the fact that if you have items in a safe deposit box, it's not insured. The bank does not carry insurance on your possessions in the safe deposit box.
Yeah, that kind of shocked me.
Yeah, that shocked me too.
Yeah. You have to provide your own insurance for anything that's in the safe deposit box. Typically, that's a rider on your homeowner's insurance policy.
So let's go on to number two. Number two is, who are your key contacts? And this is the names, addresses, phone numbers, and websites for any professionals involved in your parents' financial and medical lives.
That's going to include people like financial planners, investment advisors, brokers, lawyers, insurance agents, accountants, doctors, both their general family doctor and specialists that they see, as well as any other medical professionals that they're visiting on occasion. Another question for your parents is, how are your accounts registered? You know, whether your parents' accounts are registered in one name, if they're in both names as joint owners, the way they're set up determines who controls the assets and how they're going to transfer. And the way that the account is registered can help avoid probate by making the account owner's intentions crystal clear.
So when you're checking on how the accounts are registered, it's also a good idea to check out any beneficiary designations. So make sure your parents' beneficiary designations are up to date, and make sure you have the names, addresses, and phone numbers of all the beneficiaries. And be sure that they've designated both primary and contingent beneficiaries in case their primary beneficiary passes away before they do.
And I think one of the most important things is you need to maybe have a conversation with their lawyer, you know, the person who did their will or their trust or whatnot, because you want to make sure the words, you know, joint tenants with right of survivorship or tenants in common, you know, all those things in different states can have different meanings, and it definitely affects the capability to avoid probate and how things are going to pass. So you want to make sure that in the state where your parents live, that everything is registered, including all those nice little letters that come at the end, how things are going to go.
Well, while you're talking to the lawyer about the way things are registered, it's a good idea to check and make sure your will is up to date, because things change over the course of years, and we recommend every 5 years or so revisiting your will.
5 years is a long time. You know, it could be even less than that, especially if anything at all, any kind of a life event has occurred.
Births, deaths. So a will appoints someone to manage an estate and dictates how a person's property is going to transfer upon their death. So having a current will is important if your parents want to have any say in how their estate's going to be distributed.
And, you know, if there's children, all the children, you know, are they supposed to be treated equally? Or does somebody get left out? Or, you know, are there people other than the children included?
Are there people, are some of the children special needs that need
exactly, yes,
to be taken
absolutely.
Care of?
And are distributions made outright, or do they go into a trust? What are bequests to friends or other relatives? What about bequests to the church or diocese or other charities? And are they planning to disinherit anyone? If so, they need to have a written statement as to why they're doing that.
And if they have disinherited somebody, it'd be a good idea to declare that before they are dead, so you don't have the family turmoil afterwards when the siblings are fighting over everything.
Do your parents have a designated power of attorney? Everybody should have a durable power of attorney appointing somebody to make the financial decisions for them. It doesn't come into effect until they're not able to do that themselves. It's used for things like filing income tax returns, withdrawing funds from their IRA or retirement accounts for their care, dealing with credit card companies and insurance companies, making deposits or writing checks on the parent's bank account. You know, all those kinds of things can be handled with a financial, durable power of attorney. Now, that's different from a healthcare power of attorney, which is sometimes called a healthcare proxy. A healthcare proxy designates a person who has authority to make medical decisions for them.
So if they don't have a healthcare proxy, the court system is going to intervene and appoint a legal guardian, which can be invasive and complicated. We had another case of that here recently in our hometown, didn't we, where the courts were appointing a healthcare proxy who was doing things that was against the wishes of both the individual and the family.
They were just doing things the way they thought it would benefit themselves.
Yeah, they were pretty much scamming these elderly people that they were put in charge of caring for. So that's really not a good situation. So you want to make sure your parents have designated someone they trust to make medical decisions for them.
Especially, you know, as Catholics, there's a lot of things that we need to be concerned with and comfortable with as we enter the end of life time frame, relative to respect for life and respect for the body. And if you can handle those kind of things, the person should be a Catholic.
As John and Evelyn mentioned at the beginning of today's show, having that conversation with your parents now is extremely crucial. Explaining to them that having these documents, all this information, will create a less stressful time when it's that time that you have to deal with the estate. And on our website, compasscatholic.org, we have information that will help you get that conversation started and a guide on what you need to know to organize into one binder or stored on a computer or in the cloud. The site is compasscatholic.org. Look for Set Your House in Order. So, John, let's dig a little deeper on that healthcare directive and explain the differences between a Catholic healthcare directive and one that you would sign entering a hospital.
On the Advanced Healthcare Directive, that allows, again, your parents to designate, and it's probably going to be the same person, a person who has authority to make the healthcare decisions for them when they're no longer able to do that or they refuse to do that. And this document clarifies their wishes with regard to artificial life support in the event of a condition from which they will never recover. It allows them to make statements regarding the types of treatment they're going to want to receive or they don't want to receive. You know, do they want to have all these heroic measures or chemotherapy and radiation and blood transfusions or not? Do they want to be cared for in the hospital or do they want to go home as soon as possible so that they can live out their last days at home? And it also talks about organ donations. And, you know, most people today have organ donation as part of their driver's license recertification process. So, that you know, that's on your driver's license. But these are all things that a healthcare directive needs to entail. And the big thing between a Catholic living will and just a regular secular living will is the sanctity of life. A typical secular living will say if two or more doctors agree that you will not recover from whatever it is that you're battling at that point in time, and death is imminent within 2 or 3 months, they can actually withhold food and hydration, so food and water.
And nutrition. It could be artificial or like feeding through a tube or something like that.
Intravenous, yes, yeah. Well, that doesn't protect the sanctity of life. And that's a big issue for us as Catholics. We want to protect the sanctity of life in all cases. And the Church says that nutrition and hydration, even through an IV, is perfectly appropriate and required to maintain the life of the person who's ill. The secular, as I've explained, the secular documentation doesn't do that.
Well, and let's face it, if the two or three doctors say you're terminal, we're all terminal sooner or later, right? So
hopefully not in the next couple of months.
But I mean, you know what I'm saying, the fact that nobody's going to get out of here alive. So One of the things I thought was interesting when we were doing some research for the show is that in many cities, the emergency responders are going to look for the healthcare directive on the refrigerator door. And I remember we found that when we were helping your roommate move the last time we saw him in his old location. He had the emergency contact number on the door of his refrigerator, because that's where the emergency, like police or firemen, are trained to look for those kinds of information. So if you live in a city that's remote from your parents, that would be a good place for them to keep that information.
Yep, that's a good idea.
You know, it's probably a good idea also to keep in touch with the nurses or the doctors or the hospice care people that are serving your parents if it gets to that situation, so that they understand what the healthcare directive says and what it means, and they're following the wishes that your parents documented.
And you probably can't just tell one person and expect them to share that with everybody.
Yes.
You need to talk to anybody who's treating at any time of the day or night, whenever. They need to know that. I think that's important.
Now, the one thing that a lot of us have, which we don't appreciate until we're looking for something, is access to electronic information. We have, I don't know how many electronic sites that we access on a regular basis for both personal stuff and ministry stuff. And without knowing all the passwords and all the URLs and all the security questions, it's impossible to get into that information. So if your parents keep their financial records or any other records that are important for you to access, be sure you get the details and you know how to access it.
I think that's really, really important. And, you know, even today, you should be keeping your own records too, and your parents should be keeping their records that go back a long time. I was able to avoid surgery in one case several years ago because I had EKGs that went back for about 20 years. And I could show the doctors on the EKGs that were 20 years old the little blip that they were getting all excited about and they wanted to do a surgery about has existed forever. So I think that's important. And the easiest place to store all those records, obviously, is electronically, because otherwise you're going to have files and files and files. But if you've got them electronically, it's easier to categorize them. It's easier to do a search, and you can find that stuff. And so one of the things that your parents need to have available for you so you can find it is, what are the URLs, the addresses where these files are stored, and what are their user IDs and the PIN numbers and passwords, and are there security questions? And if so, what are the answers to the security questions? Just because it was an easy answer for your mom or dad doesn't mean you're going to know what that answer is.
So. Well, and it's the format, too. You know, if you went to St. Anne's School, is it S-A-I-N-T? Is it S-T? Is it S-T period? Is it A-N-N or A-N-N apostrophe S? So you may know the information, but you have to put it in the same way that your parents answered the specific way your parents answered the question.
And your parents should be keeping this stuff in a really safe place that you can access, that's available to you. But, you know, if you need to write them down, make sure you keep them in a safe place and make sure they're updated on a regular basis.
Now, the next thing is, how do you want to disposition your personal items? You know, a lot of times the little miscellaneous stuff is not in the will, but there are special things like jewelry or art or furniture that they may want to give to a certain person in the family. Do they have special instructions for you regarding how their assets are to be distributed? Is there something they promise to someone? Is there a special, like, ring from grandma that they promise to the oldest grandchild or something like that? What needs to go to a specific individual should be documented, and or the process for how that stuff's going to be distributed should be documented according to their wishes. So, for example, they may have the oldest grandchild pick something out of the jewelry stack, and then the next grandchild, until you go through it and all the jewelry's gone.
It can get really tricky. And and there's a lot of feelings.
Emotions.
And emotions that are going to be right on the surface when that kind of stuff happens. So the more documentation you have, the easier it's going to be to go through that process and distribute things once your parents are gone.
Because you don't have to be the bad guy. You can always point to mom and dad as the bad guy, right?
Well, they've been the bad guy all of my life, you know.
Did they make you behave, poor little thing? And the really bad one that nobody wants to talk about is final wishes. You know, that's probably the toughest questions to ask, to find out what your parents want for final arrangements.
Absolutely. When somebody dies, like I was saying, you know, there's a lot of grief and, you know, it's just really better to have all these decisions made ahead of time. You know, do they have a cemetery plot, prepaid mortuary arrangements? What are their funeral arrangements? You know, do they want to, what kind of suit or dress do they want to wear? What are they going to do with their glasses? What are they going to do with their jewelry? You know, is there going to be a wake? Is there going to be a closed casket? You know, all that kind of stuff. It can be done beforehand when there's no emotion involved. Everybody's thinking clearly. It's just better to have it done beforehand.
Well, one of the big ones is, do you want to be buried or do you want to be cremated? I mean, that's a big one that I don't think any family member is comfortable making, not knowing what their parents' wishes would have been. So that's an important one to have documented. So this is a very important discussion to have with your parents, and probably one of the most difficult discussions you're going to have with them. Except when you were young and you got into trouble and they were yelling at you, right? And it's very easy to put it off, but don't wait until it's too late, because it's going to be a great blessing to you and your family if you have these discussions ahead of time and you know exactly what your parents' wishes are.
Death is going to come sooner or later. And Isaiah 38:1, we hear, "Thus says the Lord, put your house in order, for you are about to die and you shall not recover."
We hope that you see the value in having that conversation with your parents. And as I mentioned a few minutes ago, having all this material, these crucial, important documents organized in one place will eliminate the stress of having to recreate these documents last minute. Now, if you missed any of today's program, you can catch it again. It's available on our website at compasscatholic.org. Also, Evelyn has prepared notes from today's show, a guide that will help you put all this information together, these important documents, and you'll find that in her blog, compasscatholic.org. And while you're on the website, also look at our Bible study called Set Your House in Order. We have all the details in that Bible study as well. And before we leave you today, let's answer a couple of our emails that we received this week. John and Evelyn, my brother is investing in something I would consider to be a get-rich-quick scheme. What advice would you recommend I give him?
You know, it's hard to watch somebody make a mistake or, you know, watch a train wreck start to occur. So it's really important for you to understand exactly what your brother's doing. I think that what he's saying may not be quite exactly what you're doing, so you need to understand it. And then I think the best way to ask people to rethink something that you think may be a mistake is, instead of peppering them with objections, just ask questions. Things like, well, instead of saying, "I don't think your money's going to be safe, I think you're going to lose your money," ask, "Well, what's the risk of you being successful or you losing money in this endeavor?"
Yeah, I absolutely agree that if you just start peppering the person with objections, it's going to cause problems. What you really want to do is get them to think about things that maybe they haven't thought about, or at least the same things that you're thinking about, so that you can actually address the issues. Is this going to be a safe investment? What happens if the market turns down? What's going to happen to your investment? If the market turns down and the investment goes down, what's that going to do to your overall ability to continue to live the lifestyle that you currently have? Or, you know, those types of questions are the kinds of questions that will help.
Yeah, I think anytime you try to object to what somebody's doing, they just kind of stick their feet in the mud and decide not to move forward, and you just make them more adamant about doing it if you're very vocal about your objection to them doing it.
Yeah.
So it's best to come at it from, use a soft stick, not a large stick.
All right, John and Evelyn, in fact, we've been asked this question a number of times, either through email or when we're out appearing somewhere. Here's the question. We're building a home and have enough saved to put 35% down, but we can afford to put even more down, closer to 60%, if I dip into my Roth IRA principal. I'd like a smaller mortgage, but my average return on the Roth are several times larger than the mortgage rate. Plus, it grows tax-free. So I don't know what to do. What do you two advise?
Well, you know, it sounds like you're in pretty good financial shape, and I would be very concerned about taking money out of your Roth and having to pay a penalty, especially if you're getting a big return on investment in your Roth, bigger than what you're going to be paying in the mortgage. So I think that you need to keep the money in the Roth and aggressively pay off your mortgage based on the current amount you have available to put as a down payment.
Yes, I would agree with that 100%. That retirement savings is extremely important. And as you say, it will continue to grow and multiply tax-free, which is a huge, huge thing in your retirement once you begin to start pulling from that. If you can get your house paid off quickly, like Evelyn advised, I'd be very aggressive with that, because the less outgo that you have in your retirement years, the easier it's going to be for you to do some fun things like travel and stuff like that, because your absolute bills will be at a minimum.
Well, you know, the other thing is, you're not only losing, if you take money out of your retirement account, you're not only losing the money you took out, but you're losing the interest on that money, the compound interest that that money would bring you over the course of paying off the mortgage. So
yeah, and definitely, that's a significant amount.
Yeah, leave the money in the Roth.
Yeah, I agree.
John and Evelyn, as always, thank you so much. Now, if you have a question for John and Evelyn, maybe you have a financial challenge that you're struggling with and you'd like a second opinion, maybe some advice, by all means, send your questions to ask@compasscatholic.org. That email address again for John and Evelyn, ask@compasscatholic.org. And you may send in as many questions as you would like. For John and Evelyn Bean, thank you so much for listening. Remember, we have a brand new podcast for you. It comes up each and every Wednesday morning. Simply go to compasscatholic.org. Scroll down on the homepage, click on podcast. This is Manage Your Money God's Way. We're from Compass Catholic Ministries.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com.